Well, the familiar sound of a diesel engine taking over means I'm back in Hull Station, and it's the 9th of April 2016, Saturday. I just got back from Edinburgh last night from the Royal College of Nursing International Research Conference, and this morning I'm going down to London to go to Heathrow to fly out again, second time within a fortnight, to Riyadh, where I'm going to spend 2 weeks at King Saud University.
They didn't want to travel today, and at the moment they did have some bags in the hold, so with everybody's safety and security in mind, we're just offloading those bags, so I've been told it could take about 5 or 10 minutes from now to get those off. Let me introduce the rest of the crew. With me on the flight deck is Senior First Officer Paul Kinsella, and in the cabin, lovely cabin crew led by Cabin Service Director Andy Knight. As we push back from the stand, Andy and the crew will demonstrate the safety equipment on this 777. It is a very important briefing, and I would ask you to give them your full attention. The flight time today down to Riyadh is 6 hours and 5 minutes. The forecast flight conditions are to be mainly smooth, but in British Airways we do recommend when you're in your seats you have your seatbelt securely fastened and visible at all times to the cabin crew. Just in case we have the seatbelt signs on. Seatbelt signs just like this. And also, if you're walking by the cabin and the seatbelt sign does go on, then I would ask you to return to your seats and fasten those belts. Now, just one final note on safety. This is a no-smoking flight. So, as I said, hoping to be going in another couple of minutes once we get those bags off and get you on your way. I'll speak to you about 40 minutes out from Riyadh with the very latest weather and the arrival time. So, please do sit back, relax, and enjoy the flight.
Top you up for a moment.
Thank you very much, Captain. As the Captain has just mentioned, my name is Andy Knight. It's my very, very pleasure to be your cabin service.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Riyadh. It's just coming up to 20 past 10 on Saturday night. Can I ask you to remain in your seat with your seatbelt fastened, leaving your hand luggage safely stowed until the Captain switches off the seatbelt sign? You may now make and receive calls and use all data services on your handheld electronic devices. Once it's safe to do so, please do take care when you open the overhead lockers to make sure nothing falls in ahead.
Well, it's now the 10th of April 2016 and it's Sunday in Riyadh, so I just arrived about an hour ago. The British Airways flight at 1:45 from Heathrow is definitely the best one to get. The Qatar Airlines flights flight gets in a bit too late. Sadly, next time I come, that's the one I'm getting. And I was in first class, so it was really very nice, very relaxing, very comfortable. No real problems getting here, except at immigration, the man behind the desk, who was busily watching a football match on his phone, kept asking for my boarding pass, although I'd given him my boarding pass. They don't always ask for it, but I always have it handy just in case. And it said boarding pass on it. It had the flight number on it and all the rest of it, but he didn't believe this was my boarding pass for some reason. Anyway, eventually he let me through. And he handed back my immigration card to me, which they insist you fill in. He never even looked at it once. This is usually filed away, so I don't know what that was about. Whether he was just new or just completely unprofessional, I've got no idea. But as I say, most of the time he was concentrating on a football match on his iPhone. So I don't know what time I'm being picked up tomorrow, but the driver at the airport was the one I had all the time when I was here last time. Very nice man. He won't be taking me tomorrow, but he'll be taking me for the rest of the week. So I'll have to get up early just to make sure I don't miss the driver tomorrow, and then find out what Ahmad has got in mind for me for the next couple of weeks. That's a good start to the day. I got a phone call at 6:20 this morning, which was before I was awake, telling me that my driver would pick me up at 7, so I quickly had to get up, showered, get some breakfast. The driver is not my usual driver, so this one doesn't know where we're going, and then phoned the university to find out, but he said there's no point in coming now because there's nobody there. So I've got another half hour before I go. It's now Monday the 11th of April 2016 in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. I've put a day's work in already because Sunday's the beginning of the week here. Feels a bit strange because this definitely feels like Tuesday. It's very easy to get disoriented with the days here. So yesterday we just spent planning mainly. I got an office to use and planned out the week's activities, and also next week's activities, and I'm sure that'll change as the time goes on. Last night I had dinner with Ahmad Abushaker, the Dean of Nursing, and one of the female colleagues, Tahani, who's hoping to come to Hull to do a PhD. So we'll see if that works out. And today I'm doing some consultations with staff. Well, that's Monday the 11th over in terms of work. The day starts here pretty early and finishes at 3. There's an awful pressure, as I think I've said before, to get you in ridiculously early. You go in there, nothing really happens. Lots of talk. It's a very verbal and oral kind of culture. But I didn't get in there until just before 9 o'clock. And tomorrow I've agreed with my driver that we'll leave at 8:30. And tomorrow I'm going to the ladies' college, so it's not quite so far away. I was allocated the same driver as I had last time, a young Indian man who met me at the airport, and he was going to be my driver all week, but he seems to have disappeared, so now I have a Filipino man who I think I saw last time, discovered he's called Irwin. So I went up to him this morning and asked where Irwin was, because I saw a Filipino man in a suit and tie, which he wasn't wearing before, and he said, "I'm Irwin," so I felt a bit embarrassed about that. However, I have not worked out why it takes about 5 minutes to get to the campus and nearly 30 minutes to get back. We seem to come back by a completely different road. I don't know why the route can't be reversed. But why should I question that? I get away early enough anyway. So my days are essentially from 9 o'clock until 3 o'clock. Today I was supposed to sit in an office that I've been allocated and of staff meeting me for consultations, and this time I got 2 fewer staff seeing me than last time. Last time I saw 2, in other words this time none came. They're really not prepared for it here, they're not kind of up to speed on these things, but also nothing's done ahead of time. I mean, my visit was arranged in the morning I got here. There's always a great deal of last minute arrangement, rearrangement, a bit of stress. Every arrangement's changed just about. Last night we were supposed to go for dinner to the large, very iconic hotel here, or building here, should I say. I don't know what the building's called. I must find out again. It's got 2 prongs and a restaurant suspended between the 2 prongs at the top, and it's probably, I'm sure, the tallest building in Saudi. Pretty impressive. I've been to the bottom of it, but never to the top, and we were going to go to a restaurant about halfway up. But then we ended up eating in the hotel. The food here, I have to say, is pretty awful. The rooms are large and comfortable. The hotel's very nice and friendly, well-positioned, quiet kind of area. But I noticed last time here, after a week, I was fed up eating in the restaurant. I don't know what I'm going to be like here after 2 weeks, although I'm not eating in it every single night. The food is always, it doesn't matter. If the restaurant's empty, it always takes 30 minutes to prepare the food. And if you order a soft drink for a start, that takes nearly half of the time to come. Very odd. They're not quite set up to cope, I don't think. So, found a new scam today. I've been getting emails regularly telling me that my ESTA, my visa waiver for the States has run out, which is true. But I didn't respond to them for a start. In fact, I didn't respond to them at all because I was changing my passport. But today I got one again on my Gmail, and I thought, well, I may as well respond to this one because I've got a new passport. But of course I just had to start. It's nothing to do with renewing at all. There's no possibility of renewing it. You just start again. So I got through the whole process, all the usual details filled in, got to the bit where you're asked for your credit card. It didn't say the amount that was coming off. I just thought I'd check the URL, and I thought, that doesn't actually look like the US government website, which I definitely used before, because I've been on it, and I've seen it, and I've recognised it. So I just went to that site and checked, and of course it bears no relation to it whatsoever, and this is clearly a scam. I don't know how they get your Gmail, which I do use for these things, or maybe that's just a wild guess. So I stopped at that point and just closed the website down, but of course I'd left enough details on there, for instance name, address and such like, and my passport number. And I got a phone call from London about this, and it was clearly a Pakistani lady on the phone, asking if I'd had some problems making a payment, and I said no, I just wasn't willing to go ahead, I was going to go to the official website, and she admitted that they weren't the official website, they were an agency. And I said, well, I've not used you before. She said, yes, you did. You used us 2 years ago. Well, I didn't. It was a lot longer than 2 years ago when I last applied for an ESTA. I think they last a bit longer than that. But nevertheless, I haven't used them before. So she was still talking when I put the phone down, having told her I was going to go to the American government official site. I don't know why these sites exist, but I did put an ESTA scam into Google and found there were plenty of them. Maybe they're genuine, maybe they're not, but there's absolutely no need to do it, because if you go to the US website, it does cost you a few dollars, not much, and it's the official site. And in fact, if I go to that, and I've been to it recently, my details are actually registered there, so this is just a lie. I used an agency in complete error for my Australian ETA couple of years ago when Debbie and my daughter and I went to Australia. We got to Heathrow Airport and my daughter's ETA was okay. Debbie and I didn't have them and we'd paid quite a lot of money for them. I just clicked on the top website that came up in Google without thinking. I did wonder if we had to pay for them. I couldn't remember or not. It was quite a lot of money. I think it was about £25 each. Of course, at Heathrow, if you get Cathay Pacific to do it straight away by phoning the Australian Visa Office in Adelaide, which seems to operate 24 hours a day, you pay something like 50 quid for each one. However, they don't actually cost anything if you go to imi.gov, which I have been on since. You live and learn. So I'm back in my room pretty early. The time in my office today, without anybody interrupting me, meant that I had from 9 o'clock until 3 o'clock. Writing and preparing presentations, so everything's done. I see a lady who appears to wear a mask, but I'm guessing she's local in Saudi. Let's see what her name is here, it's on my Twitter feed. She's called Noofto, N-O-O-F-T-O, at N-O-O-F-T-O. Says she's excited about my workshop tomorrow, which is interesting. I wasn't sure which workshop she was referring to, but of course I'm going to the female college tomorrow, so it clearly has to be that. And I was just rather surprised at the website. The mask is rather strange because it reveals most of her face. I'm assuming it's her. So I'll ask who she is tomorrow, and she probably won't say. And I asked which workshop, and she said Principle of Research. And this is something at the very last minute I was asked to do, but I'm going to do preparing a proposal and thesis writing, which is really what I think the supervisors want us to do. Research will have to come into it. So I hope I'm not disappointing her. I notice she's also got a hammer and sickle symbol on her on her feed. I don't know how she gets that into it. Just before her name, she's got a SoundCloud with link with things like Alice Cooper on it, which is rather strange. She's got 3,500 followers, mind you. Her description is in Arabic, but it's also got La musique a douce les mœurs, which I think is something to do with death, and hashtag defect. All very strange. We'll find out tomorrow. As I say, nothing really surprises me here. It's Tuesday, the 12th of April 2016, and I'm still in Riyadh. Today it's Ladies' Day, not at Ascot, but at the Ladies' College here at King Saud University, where I go to visit. It's always a bit of a pain in the neck. I'm sure it's the last thing they want to have a man around, because they've got to come out to the outer sanctum, or out to the outer bit from the inner sanctum, and put on their yashmaks and such like. I'm sure it's just a complete pain to them, but never mind. I've got a whole day there. Let's hope I'm not too busy in the afternoon and I get some more work done. I only discovered on Twitter last night the title of a lecture I'm supposed to be doing next week at King Faisal Hospital, because someone said they were looking forward to hearing it, but I hadn't actually been given the title. It's great how plans are made behind your back. My sense of direction in Riyadh was even worse than I thought, and I hadn't really got a clue how to get to the ladies' campus, or the girls' campus as it's called here. There is a sign near the male campus, but that isn't the way to get to where I am today, and the driver didn't really know either, so we arrived late. However, I'm here in a room by myself, and there's nobody here, so I haven't got a clue what's happening. Nothing really seems to happen on time here, so I could have been a lot later. I'm at the ladies' college, where men are not allowed apart from in the outer part, and I'm being whisked around and avoided and ignored all at the same time by women whose faces I can't see. I can't even see their eyes because they're completely covered. What a bizarre way to conduct oneself. So I'm in a room with coffee pots and food in it. It looks like there's going to be something to eat and talk before we get started. But I'm actually here to do presentations, so I hope there's a PowerPoint projector somewhere for me to do that. Well, good morning. I've met you before. Have I met any of the other ones before? No. Good. Because I can't recognise. I'll recognise you if I see you, but I can't recognise you with your faces covered. So apologies for being a man and making you dress like that. It must be absolutely awful, but I know what the rules are here. Right. I'm Roger. Okay. Oh, there we go. Roger. Don't call me prof or anything like that. Just Roger. If you want to ask a question. And I don't mind being interrupted. I'm going to sort of start this way because I've just been flying a lot and this ear is completely blocked again. It was the same last time I was here. I got it all clear and it's done it again. Something to do with being 60 years old and flying 150,000 miles a year. What Ahmad wanted me to talk to you about was writing a research proposal, and he also wanted me to talk about writing up a research proposal, writing up your research, and to talk about ABC of research. We haven't got time to do all that, that's impossible. So I'm going to talk about writing a research proposal, and then I'm going to talk about writing a thesis, which is a little bit premature for some of you, I know, but it's a PhD or a master's thesis, just some basic outlines of how to do it. These slides are on the desktop, so you can have them and give them to the students, because they actually might be a good aid memoir for you as you do this. I'll try and watch the time. I'll put my watch over there. Okay. See you there, okay? Otherwise, I'll just go on and on. Good. So, writing a good research proposal.
How about are you master's students?
Yes.
You've finished your finished your master's, but your master's students. Have you written your research proposals yet?
Yes.
You have. All right. No. So some of you have, some of you haven't. So you can tell me if I'm speaking rubbish or not. Okay. So tell me if you agree or not. I don't want to say, the problem is when you've done it and then somebody says something, says, oh, I've done something wrong, you know, but this is just some ideas, okay? I think the main thing, the problem that I see when I look at research proposals from undergraduates, master's students, from PhD students, from colleagues who are submitting research proposals to funding bodies, and I look at hundreds of those, when my colleagues show me a potential research proposal they want to do with me, is lack of clarity. It's not understanding exactly what they want to do. And that's got to be foremost of the thing. That's what people want to know. What's the story? What's the research question? How are you going to do it? How are you going to know you've done it? And then what are you going to do with it afterwards? Which is to write it up. So there's nothing very scientific or very difficult about this. This is just a series of very straightforward, simple points about it. But getting things clear is the main aim of what I want to talk about. And I think the best, and I know you have a structure for your master's dissertations here with problem statements and all the rest of it. I'm not going to talk necessarily about problem statements, but the headings and subheadings are there for a reason. And the other thing that I find when people write research proposals and when they write publications is things go under the wrong headings, you know, so you've got to get the right things in the right place. Okay, I'll stop there. Can you understand what I'm saying? Okay?
Yes.
I speak English, but I come from Scotland, top of England, or top of the UK, above England, and my accent's not like the one she probably have heard most of the time. Have you met Janet?
Well, that's the end of another day, the 12th of April 2016. As you'll have heard there, I was teaching today at the Ladies' College. Farcical. Eventually I got into the room to meet them. In fact, in the end I was being rushed in to meet them, and they had a colleague with them who seemed to talk over me a lot, but the young ladies were quite talkative and asked a lot of questions. It's really difficult when you got a blocked ear from flying too much and having a slight cold, and they speak behind these face masks, as I call them, yashmaks, and they cannot project the voices, so I had real difficulty hearing what they were saying in the class. But I gave a couple of sessions, one which I wasn't planning to give, but which they asked for, which I was able to give, and then some one-to-one meetings, one with our potential, very potential PhD student, Tihani, who's going to come to Hull, we hope, in September to do her PhD. Ahmad, the dean, turned up at one point to speak to the students, and I met the dean of the college there, who I met last time, and I gave some advice on a few projects. And there's also a poor student who I'm working with, and I didn't recognise her and wasn't sure what she was talking about, and I really don't know how they expect us to recognise them or remember them when there's absolutely no cue at all apart from a pair of eyes, and the names are said so quickly with Arabic accents that we just can't pick them up. However, I think I've pinned her down now and remember her, and I'm co-supervising her master's degree along with, I think, with Ahmad. So, I've been to the gym. It rained today. There's warnings out in case the place flooded, and that can do that spectacularly here. Somebody showed me a piece of film which demonstrated this. Terrifying. And I missed the rain. I was in my room at the time working. Went down to the gym, which is in the basement, and the car park on the way to the gym was flooded. I had to creep around the edge of the water and go along a ledge to get into the gym, but by the time I came out it was all gone. So I guess that's cooled things down a bit. My plans to go running outside this morning just fell through. I think I'll just wait till I get to Jeddah to do that. There really isn't anywhere to run here. I just think it would cause too many problems. So, dinner time. It's Wednesday the 13th of April 2016, still in Riyadh, and I'm going off to work soon after breakfast. And today I'm going to the King Faisal Hospital for a meeting at lunchtime. My driver's picking myself and one of my colleagues here, Omar Baker, up to go there. then hopefully that's me free for the rest of the afternoon once we get back from that, and then I'm going to the British Embassy, to at least to the Ambassador's residence tonight for this Dundee University event, which I've been invited. That'll be interesting, and I'm not sure if my driver's going to take me yet. It looks like it's going to be a taxi probably, so that'll be interesting too. Here's how it goes in the Middle East. I've got this event at the British Ambassador's residence tonight. The e-ticket that we were sent to put in our phone wallets says 17:30, which is 5:30. The dean here said, well, it starts at 7:30, and I said, well, the ticket says 5:30. And then an email this morning confirms from the embassy that it starts at 7:30. And obviously the e-ticket's wrong. Had I not had that second email asking me for my passport number and telling me to bring my passport with me, as I thought, right at the last minute. I mean, this is a thing that should be organised days in advance, because I could have been away from my passport today. It says 7:30, so there we go. Now, I've just left my driver saying pick me up at 12 o'clock for a meeting at King Faisal Hospital. I originally thought we were to be picked up at 11:30, that's what we agreed, but an email yesterday said 12 o'clock. For lunch at 12:30. Now a WhatsApp from a colleague saying it's actually at 12, so my driver's got to pick us up at 11:30, but I've left my driver and I don't know how to contact him. That's how it goes here. Another insight into how Saudi works. There was rain yesterday. There was a warning of very heavy rain. It does get torrential here. It does make a driving dangerous and going near any water holes, drains or wadis, but the schools were all closed today, and I didn't realise that meant the university, so I went in this morning to teach, or at least to meet master students and consult, and there was nobody there. It's a good job I hadn't prepared a whole bunch of lectures. And today's been absolutely beautiful. It's been sunny and clear. They say it might rain again tonight, but I can't help feeling this propensity to panic over very little here. So I'm just spending some time working in my room this afternoon at the hotel, and I've still got to go off to the British Embassy. And then my main task when I get back, or my main task before I go, is to retrieve my laundry from the hotel. That always seems to be quite difficult here too. And then to check in for Jeddah tomorrow night. Well, some reflections on my visit to the British Embassy. It wasn't like my visit 26 years ago. Security is incredibly tight these days, and getting into the diplomatic quarter alone is quite a task through chicanes and army checkpoints. And once you're there, you have your mobile phone taken off you. So I surrendered my Olympus dictaphone, which I'm recording this on. I thought if I get caught with that, I would be in trouble. An okay evening. Very nice to see Janice Rattray from Dundee there, and also female colleagues from the school who actually rescued me. Very strange story. I got a driver to take me. A taxi was hailed by the hotel, and I just knew he didn't know where he was going, and he first of all tried to drop me off at the British school. And I said, well, he didn't. I said, no, he didn't understand what I was saying, but I just said, keep going. And then we got to, he asked someone about the British Embassy, they showed him where it was, but we were in the Ambassador's residence, not the British Embassy. The Ambassador's residence is round at the back, it's all in the same compound. You can't get anywhere near the embassy. So, luckily bumped into a Dutchman coming out of the, presumably the Dutch Embassy, or the Belgian Embassy, which was there. And he was very helpful and suggested we ask the man at the gate at the Belgian Embassy, who eventually showed us where to go. But in the meantime, my driver just didn't seem to be convinced at all. Another car stopped and two ladies in Arab dress said, it's Roger, we recognise you. And these were people I'd taught last year when I was here. So incredible coincidence. So they were going to the same event. So I just paid off my driver, went with them, and then this driver made a complete and utter meal of going to the place. I knew where we were. I said, stop here. He didn't stop. They didn't seem to tell him to stop. People here just don't seem to do things quickly, take instructions and follow them. So we had to go right round the block again. The event started at 7:30. I was actually in the vicinity at 7:15. We didn't get in until 8:10. The ambassador had already given a speech and someone from Dundee University was speaking. It was a Dundee University event. So it went well, some good food. I've had two meals today, which is one too many by far, certainly given the amount of food here. And then Ahmad, who was going to turn up late and take me home, didn't turn up. I thought there'd be no chance of getting a taxi from there. Luckily, Aliyah, the female dean, was there and she offered to take me home, but that was a bit of a strange experience. She hailed her car and then went round to the other side. Once the driver, she opened the door on the right-hand side, went round to the other side. I thought, this is odd, because men are not supposed to travel in the back with women here, so I motioned to the driver, would I go in the front? I said, nope, it's okay, go in the back. And when the doors were closed, I realised there were blackened windows. But I have to say, I was a little bit concerned in case we got stopped, because it's a very serious offence, and probably a much more serious offence for me than her. Ah, got home safely. I'm beginning to know this district here, so I knew when we were near the hotel, which was good. This afternoon at the King Faisal Specialist Hospital, we eventually got there. I think I indicated earlier that the man who was picking me up was late. He couldn't find the office. Got there for lunch. It was just a quick lunch, planning for Monday when I'm doing some, or Sunday when I'm doing some papers there, and trying to get to know them, do some work for the future. Let's see what will come out of it. These hospitals are like Chinese hospitals, enormous proportions, fantastic buildings, hundreds of people there, everybody seems to be sick here, lots of staff going about, the place is just packed, really good dining room, and they seem to have a notion given to them by Ahmad that I should do something on getting evidence or getting research to the bedside. And I said, I really don't want to talk about that. I said, I'll talk about evidence-based practice generally, but I said, it's not as easy as doing a bit of research and then getting it implemented at the bedside. It doesn't really work like that. But I've got my talks ready, and I think I've persuaded them about what I want to do. And then the next day, I'm talking at the ministry, and they gave me a timetable which made absolutely no sense at all. Titles I wouldn't even begin to know how to address. One on referencing, which would bore them rigid. I gave them suggestions of what I wanted to do, and they agreed to it. Why they don't ask you in the first place, I don't know. You can probably tell I'm a little bit frustrated by this place. That's a week I've had here. Tomorrow I've got a lunch in the afternoon at the Ritz-Carlton, the fabulous six-star hotel here. I'd rather not go, to be honest. And then I've got my boarding pass printed out, get back to the hotel, and then get packed and go down to Jeddah for the weekend. I can't wait. It's Thursday the 14th of April 2016. I am at King Khalid Airport in Riyadh. Today I've been into the department in the morning for a Skype call with our Dean Julie Jameen, between her and Ahmad Awashaker, the Dean at King Saud University. That went very well. Spent the rest of the morning in my office getting things prepared. I sometimes wish I hadn't given stupid titles for talks like Keeping the Science in Nursing, which is the one I'm doing in Madrid in a few weeks' time. I'm finding it difficult to fill the PowerPoints, but never mind, I'll get there. And, sorry, a little kid just tried to grab my very hot cup of coffee. And then went to the sumptuous Ritz-Carlton Hotel for lunch with colleagues there. Including Janice Rattray, who I met last night from the University of Dundee, and who I last saw in the first class lounge when we were departing here almost exactly a year ago. She comes out here quite often, and I've done some work with Janice in the past. So I'm at the airport now, waiting to go down to Jeddah for the weekend. I'm just going to leave this running to let you hear the intrusiveness of the announcements in this terminal.
Allah, Allah, Allah.
That wasn't the announcement I was talking about. That was the call to prayer, but that was pretty inclusive. But you'll hear an announcement, I'm sure, any minute now, where the next flight goes. That was it.